you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
This is Raquel Willis from Queer Chronicles. Right now, there are close to 500 anti-LGBTQ plus bills in state legislatures across the country. Lambda Legal is leading the charge against these hateful bills that target mostly trans and non-binary people. You can fight discrimination and help write the next chapter of Lambda Legal history. To learn more about their open cases and to donate, visit lambdalegal.org. That's lambdalegal.org.
Happy Saturday, everybody. It is our favorite month of the show and the best month of the year, in my opinion. And to kick it off, we are going back to a previous October episode, The Beast of Gévaudan, which came out on October 22nd, 2014.
So in the course of this episode, we make a passing reference to a website about whether England was at war with France. And if you get to that point and you're like, what are they talking about? Several years ago, we basically joked about how England and France were at war with each other so frequently that there should just be one of those websites where you could put in a year and it would tell you yes or no, were they at war? After we made that joke, two different listeners made one of these websites. One of those websites is still active. We will put a link in the show notes.
So enjoy. Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class, a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works.
Podcast. I'm Tracy V. Wilson.
And I'm Holly Fry.
So recently, I asked for Halloween episode suggestions because I had this whole list of Halloween episode suggestions and really none of them were piquing my interest at all.
That happens.
I had sort of analysis paralysis about Halloween episodes. Then Helene suggested The Beast of Gévaudan. And the second that I made sure that there was a legitimate academic source in English that I had access to, I stopped looking for any other Halloween topic because this one is frightening and grisly and just deeply fascinating. So that's your heads up. If you need forewarning about frightening, grisly things, this is frightening and grisly. For hundreds of years, wolf attacks in Europe were really not all that rare. Today, the sort of ecologist's motto is that healthy wolves don't attack humans, but this was absolutely untrue in early modern Europe. There were thousands of attacks by rabid wolves and thousands more attacks by apparently healthy wolves. There had even been multiple incidents in this period in which the same wolf or group of wolves killed multiple people over a period of weeks or months. So wolves in general were considered to be a threat, and any kind of outdoor work, especially if it was around animals like sheep or goats that might attract wolves, was considered to be inherently dangerous. But the attacks that struck the Gévaudan region in the 1760s really stand out in particular. Almost exclusively, the victims were women and children, mostly attacked while they were tending animals. The men were generally left alone, even when they were doing the exact same work. The beast's method of killing was also horrific. In description after description, people talked about it dropping onto a victim in broad daylight, ripping out its throat, often decapitating the person entirely. So people were scared of wolves, but they were terrified of this beast, which is why we are going to talk about it today.
Happy Halloween. So for some context, the Gévaudan region in the south of France was remote and sparsely settled at this time. So most of its people made their livings as farmers and shepherds. The terrain was forested and mountainous. There were lots of rocky outcroppings. And all of this put it, it kind of made it an area that was sort of perfect for, or perfectly dangerous for, wolf attacks.
The beast's first recorded victim in the Gévaudan was a 14-year-old named Jeanne Boulet, who was killed while watching over livestock at the end of June 1764. And then on August 8th, a 15-year-old girl was killed, followed by a 16-year-old boy a couple of weeks later. In September, things took a deadlier turn, with four attacks claiming the lives of a 36-year-old woman and several more youths. Because the wolf attacks were already so common, and because some of these in particular happened more than 20 miles apart from each other, it was only after this particularly deadly period in September that people realized something different was going on.
During this time, France was divided into administrative regions known as généralités. By October, the Généralité's second-in-command, Étienne Lafon, started trying to organize a constant series of patrols to protect people and find this wolf. Working with a local landowner, he tried to keep 8 or 10 people on watch at all times. But he had a little bit of trouble recruiting. People were already pretty scared to stray far from their homes and into their own fields. So getting them to go patrol other people's fields was not exactly the easiest sell. Lafon wound up securing funds to actually pay people, and he started talking to the higher-ups in the Généralité about the possibility of bringing in professional soldiers.
Dragoon Captain Jean-Baptiste Duhamel was stationed nearby and was also active in the hunt. He and his men started scouring areas near where the attacks had happened, hoping to find the culprit.
It was around October that, in people's minds, at least, the culprit shifted from being an animal to being some sort of monster. People's letters and even news reports went from describing a bête féroce, a general sort of generic description of a ferocious beast, to talking about the bête with a capital B, or le monstre. So the monster. People in more urban and affluent parts of France didn't really believe in werewolves anymore, but that idea was still pretty entrenched in the more rural parts of the country.
The beast decapitated a 20-year-old woman on October 7th, and it took a week for people to find her skull. Between October 7th and 15th, 6 teenagers and a 10-year-old boy were attacked, with most of them sustaining huge injuries to their heads and faces. Only 4 of these victims survived.
Newspapers started describing the beast as being deliberately bloodthirsty, apparently drinking the victims' blood from their necks before moving on to the flesh.
Étienne Lafont advised the women and children tending the flocks that they be escorted at all times by armed men, and this unfortunately opened the door to some victim blaming. The economy in this part of France was still really feudal. Men and women and children all had work to do, and all of the work was necessary for their survival. So men really did not have the option of dropping what they were doing to escort women, and women and children didn't have the option to just stay out of the fields until they had a man with them. They also didn't have the option of just swapping jobs, since all of these jobs involved being outdoors for the most part. And people didn't just sit around cowering, though, it's important to note. The hunting parties and patrols that had been established cleared brush, and they gave chase whenever they saw an animal that they thought might be the culprit. They killed more than one wolf in all of this, but the attacks went on. By the end of October, pretty much everybody in the Gévaudan region agreed that they were not dealing with a normal wolf. Eyewitness accounts really varied dramatically in what the beast looked like. Some of them described it as having talons. Several described it as having this dark stripe that ran down its back. The one unifying part of all the descriptions was that it was much bigger than a normal wolf.
People theorized that it could be a range of animal suspects, including a wolf, of course. A hyena was also mentioned, some kind of wolf-dog-hyena hybrid. Even a monkey was brought up as a possibility. And this last seems to have started by a report in a newspaper called Courrier, which quoted an American woman who said her country was full of fearsome monkeys that did exactly this kind of thing.
Which makes me go, really?
Yeah, I'm like, quoi?
Really, American lady? So the explanation for how a hyena or a monkey could have gotten into the south of France was that they had stowed away aboard a ship or maybe escaped from a menagerie. This theory was actually a source of hope to people who thought that if this was some kind of tropical animal, that it would just die when the winter came.
It was probably also somewhat soothing to consider that it could be something escaped from a menagerie rather than an actual sort of unnatural monster that we that would be more of an unknown.
Slightly less frightening.
So late in October, a small group of hunters on the search for the beast flushed a large wolf from its den and they shot it repeatedly. And this large wolf was slowed by the bullets, but it could still move more quickly than the men that were chasing it. And so it got away and they never found the body and came to the conclusion that it had somehow survived their gunfire. This contributed to the idea that there was something supernatural at work.
It really shouldn't be surprising that as these attacks went on, since they were just spectacularly gory and horrifying, newspapers became increasingly sensational in their coverage of it. Here's an account of an event in November. Quote, on the 23rd at 5 o'clock in the evening, this cruel beast throttled a woman in a village, and after having eaten the neck all the way down to the shoulders and having sucked the blood from the body, it carried away the head.
Hunters, in sort of a grisly move, began using the remains of the beast's victims as bait. They were hoping to draw the creature out again. Not only did it not work, it also upset people, understandably.
And as the fall turned to winter, the weather started to seriously get in the way of effectively hunting. Before we talk about the next major shift in all of this, Holly, would you like to take a moment for a brief word from a sponsor?
I would indeed.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel, for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about Comfort Hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
In December, the Dragoons, led by Jean-Baptiste Duhamel, found what they thought was the beast while they were hunting through the forest. Duhamel himself was prepared to fire on it. He had it in his sights, but the other men, not realizing what was going on, came up behind him and startled it. They unfortunately lost sight of the beast as the sun went down.
Duhamel was deeply distressed by this, not merely because he had missed their quarry at the likely expense of more lives being lost, but he also had a little bit of an ego element in the mix. He didn't want to lose the glory of being the one that took the beast down.
Yeah, he was a soldier and had, you know, gotten acclaim on the field of battle before. And now that he was not in a battle, he was very frustrated by the failure to get more acclaim. And fortunately, this was just the first of many of Duhamel's failures to capture his quarry. As people started to question whether he knew what he was doing, he started distributing drawings and telling people really vivid accounts of this monster to try to convince everyone that it wasn't his fault. He was sort of building this mythology that the creature was too powerful and too obviously supernatural to be caught quickly.
And as 1764 drew to a close, a bishop from the church put out an official circular that said that the beast was a scourge sent by God. So it just built that mythology up a little bit more.
In January of 1765, Duhamel started sending out his dragoons dressed as women to try to escort women and children about their duties in the fields. He was hoping that the wolf would mistake them for a woman and attack, since it mostly attacked women and children. This didn't work.
I like that the beast could clock their drag. On January 12th, a 12-year-old boy known as Portefay reportedly chased down the wolf and attacked it with a bayonet after it had attacked and dragged off a small child.
Portofe became famous for this act of extreme bravery or foolishness, depending on your point of view. Although there were accounts of it that were heavily embellished, and the different accounts of what actually happened vary quite a bit from one to another. Portofe, however, became a rallying cry.
Duhamel, becoming kind of desperate to catch the thing and to maintain his reputation, organized a massive hunt to take place on February 7th, 1765. This was not the first coordinated hunt that was going to take place for multiple parts of this area in France at the same time, but it was definitely the biggest. About 20,000 people gathered in about 100 different parishes. And in spite of there being heavy fog that day and about 6 inches of snow on the ground, search parties spread out from their respective communities at the same time to try to find the beast.
One party thought they did, and as they pursued the animal that they believed to be the beast, it tried to escape down a river. Villagers in the town of Mazieux were supposed to be patrolling the riverbanks, but one of that town's most prominent citizens had said he would stay home if the weather was bad, and enough people followed his example that the beast easily slipped through this hole in the defenses.
However, and perhaps in an effort to save face, a hunting party from Mazieux claimed that it had seen and shot the beast. So Duhamel abandoned his original plan, which was to have a second massive hunt on the 11th if the one on the 7th failed. Instead, he arranged a smaller hunt to focus just on the area around Mazieux to take place on the 10th.
As they were hunting, a teenage girl was killed while feeding her livestock. Duhamel regrouped and prepared to keep hunting near where that attack had occurred on the 11th, using the girl's body as bait.
They did not succeed on the 11th, and they tried again on the 12th, this time fighting biting, windy weather. And in spite of their multi-day attempt, and with so many hunters on the team, they found nothing.
On his return from this hunt, Duhamel again tried to explain his failure and retain his position with a supernatural explanation. According to him, the beast was a witch or the devil. After all, 20,000 men, which he, in his telling, rounded up to 30,000, had failed to get it, so it had to be magical or supernatural.
Yeah, he was really getting desperate to hold on to his position. What he did not know was that his replacements, as basically wolf hunter in chief, had already been chosen and were on their way to the Gévaudan.
Jean-Charles Marc Antoine de Vomzel d'Orneval of Normandy took Jean-Baptiste Duhamel's place in the fight against the beast of Gévaudan. They arrived in February with Jean-Charles' son, Jean-Francois, accompanying his father.
The d'Orneval did not get along with the wolf hunters in the Gévaudan. They made demands for help and for accommodations that rankled people. They were simultaneously overconfident and underprepared. Some of the other wolf hunters who'd been searching the Gévaudan for months decided that they were frauds. You know how in badly written crime dramas, you have the scene where the local police have been trying really hard to catch the killer, and then some really slick FBI guys come in and stomp all over their investigation?
Yes.
It was like that.
Yeah, they were all swagger and did not really have the skills. Meanwhile, in March, the London Chronicle published an obviously satirical article, possibly written by Horace Walpole, about the beast, saying that it had eaten the entire French army and was found to have mortars, cannons, and at least 100 small arms in its belly when it was slain. This really annoyed the people of France and the monarchy because a lot of people had been killed in the Gévaudan already. So to kind of make fun of the whole thing was kind of a slap in the face.
We should put these years into the Was England at War with France website.
Yeah.
I don't think that they were. But, you know,
socially they were.
Socially they were having some issues. Even in light of the fact that France was facing international criticism for its failure to take care of this wolf problem, and King Louis XV himself was eager to have this beast killed, the d'Ornevals did not do much in March or April. They just did not seem to be in a big hurry. They blamed local people for all manner of ills and for their failure to get the beast. Meanwhile, there were 14 deaths over those 2 months.
One death in particular of note. On March 13th, the beast attacked a group of children in the garden outside their home. And their mother, Jeanne Varlet, was with them and reported to be pregnant. She turned to see the beast attack her six-year-old. And in a struggle that went on for several minutes, Varlet climbed onto the beast's back in an effort to wrestle her child from its jaws. When she fell off, it jumped over a hedge and she gave chase.
One of her older children was inside the house and he heard the commotion and came out with a lance and the family sheepdog. And he chased the animal and they basically fought it until it tired out, abandoned its quarry, and ran away. The six-year-old, unfortunately, didn't survive, although the rest of the family did. And Varlet's story spread as one of heroic tragedy, so she became kind of an emblem of the need to get this over with.
Yeah, I'm sure that was a little bit of an ego blow to all of these hunters, that a pregnant woman and her children had kind of had better luck, at least, kind of running this animal down than they had with their firepower and hunting knowledge. In early May, the Denevals started trying to combat the wolves by poisoning the bodies of their victims and leaving them out as bait. This did not work and once again upset people.
Then, in mid-May, there was a two-week period with no wolf attacks. The Denevals took credit for it, and they said they must have actually killed a wolf that they'd shot and had then gotten away earlier in the month. Then when another attack happened on May 19th, they started trying to seek the protection of the king at Versailles. They were afraid that their actions were going to catch up with them and that they themselves might come to harm. They were finally forced to leave town and their reputations were in shreds. And before we turn to a little happier part of this story, let's take another brief moment for a word from a sponsor.
That sounds grand.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be, with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel, for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about comfort hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper, waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
So the Denevals, who have been run out of town, were soon replaced by Francois Antoine, who was the king's gun bearer. He organized hunts with dogs and men, using dogs in particular to try to cover the region's more difficult terrain. And unlike the Denevals, he was extremely polite. He gained the trust and the affection of the locals. He did not walk in with a bunch of attitude and swagger. He really tried to work with them. And he worked through the summer of 1765 as the deaths continued to find the beast.
On September 20th, Antoine caught sight of a wolf so big that at first he thought it was a donkey. From about 50 paces away, he shot it with a long-barreled musket that he loaded with a lead ball along with lots of other smaller pieces of shot. The animal was hit, but it wasn't killed. It got to its feet and went after Antoine, who had to retreat rather than trying to reload his weapon. Monsieur Reinhard, who was an officer of the hunt, delivered the actual killing shot.
They took the wolf's body to a nearby chateau, and then they brought in people who had either witnessed or survived attacks to identify it. They all agreed that this was the wolf that attacked them. And even so, Antoine urged people not to drop their guard yet.
Pretty much everyone in the Gévaudan who looked at it agreed that the thing was enormous. And as Antoine and others told the story over and over at depositions and when talking to the newspapers, this description just got bigger and bigger.
Antoine set about hunting for any offspring the beast may have had and ordering an artisan to construct a frame for its skin so that it could be preserved and sent to the king. It wound up being embalmed instead, and by the time that happened, it had already started to decompose.
The beast body arrived at Versailles on the 1st of October, but the court of Versailles was not nearly as impressed with it as the people of the Gévaudan had been. They had really suffered from some inflated expectations by people increasingly talking about how more and more monstrous this thing was. Also, because of what we just discussed with the embalming, it smelled.
Antoine finished his task of seeking and destroying wolves from around the area where the beast had been killed on October 17th. And for more than 2 months, there were no more wolf attacks.
This is actually a, you know, it stretched into, like, that was 2 months from when he finished killing. But it wound up that there weren't any deaths from when he shot that wolf until December 7th, 1765. That day, two boys survived a wolf attack while they were guarding cattle, and then an 11-year-old girl was killed on December 21st. Unlike the first time around, when it had taken so many deaths before people saw it as a pattern, everyone immediately panicked.
However, there was also this kind of issue of saturation. Everyone also, while they were quicker to recognize this danger, they were also kind of tired of talking about this beast. So there are far fewer newspaper reports and other records detailing what happened between Francois Antoine killing a wolf on September 20th of 1765 and Jean Chastel killing another one in August of 1767.
Yeah, so almost 2 years later. The wolf that Chastel killed was big, although not nearly as big as the one that Antoine had killed almost 2 years before. However, Chastel followed what Antoine had done, and he, like, followed his example. He rounded people up to ID this wolf and say that it was the wolf that had attacked them, and then he sent its body to Versailles. However, by the time it arrived in Versailles, it was extremely rotten. The king was extremely insulting to Chastel and his son for having just brought this rotten wolf carcass into his presence, and the king ordered them all away.
Folklorist and researcher started documenting the Gévaudan wolf lore almost immediately. In the 1880s, a man named Pierre Pouchet wrote an enormous history of the wolf.
And there are all kinds of theories about exactly what this animal was and whether it was acting on its own or whether it had been trained to somehow attack people. This last theory actually got a shot in the arm when people realized that Jean Chastel had played a prank on a wolf hunting party 2 years before. They had basically said, hey, is this ground up here safe to walk on? And he was like, yeah, it's awesome. And it was actually a bog. And so the wolf hunters sunk into it up to their chests while he laughed along the sidelines. There are people who are extremely suspicious of him now and kind of wonder if he had trained animals to attack other people, and that gap between killing one wolf and another attack happening was because he was having to retrain another animal. That gets into some kind of conspiracy theory ideas. Not totally sure.
We should call Ben and Matt in and see what they think.
We
will probably never know for sure if this beast was actually a wolf or multiple wolves, or perhaps even something else that hasn't been identified.
More recently, the beast makes an appearance in the movie Brotherhood of the Wolf.
I love that movie so much. I can't even describe it. That goes into the category of cinema that I like to call haute fromage, because it's a little cheesy, but yeah, it's also really fantastic fun. And it has Vincent Cassel, which is the important part for me. And the Gévaudan region is now part of the Department of Lozère. That happened after the French Revolution, though, so that was not in play when this was going on.
Right. So that is the beast of Gévaudan. Creepy. And yeah, the book that was the primary source on this. Normally, when I research episodes, there are like 15 or 20 sources, at least. This one was mostly sourced from a book by Jay Smith called Monsters of the Gévaudan, which was published by Harvard University Press in 2011. That's pretty much the source in English on this story. So it has a lot more detail about various things that went on if you were interested in it. I had to get it from interlibrary loan, I had to time it just right. So if this story interests you, I highly recommend that book. It gets into sort of the beginning of it talks a lot about how the search for what was this animal kind of distracts from the greater story of like why people in France were so obsessed with this thing when it was going on. So it's a good read. Thank you so much for joining us on this Saturday. If you have heard an email address or a Facebook URL or something similar over the course of today's episode, since it is from the archive, that might be out of date now. You can email us at historypodcast@howstuffworks.com, and you can find us all over social media at Missed in History. And you can subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, the iHeartRadio app, and wherever else you listen to podcasts. Stuff You Missed in History Class is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
This is Raquel Willis from Queer Chronicles. Right now, there are close to 500 anti-LGBTQ plus bills in state legislatures across the country. Lambda Legal is leading the charge against these hateful bills that target mostly trans and non-binary people. You can fight discrimination and help write the next chapter of Lambda Legal history. To learn more about their open cases and to donate, visit lambdalegal.org. That's lambdalegal.org.
Managing your diabetes just got easier. The powerful new Dexcom G7 lets you see your glucose numbers on your compatible watch and phone without fingersticks. And because Dexcom G7 is the most accurate CGM system, you can be confident in your food, exercise, and medication decisions. And all those decisions can lead to big results, like more time in range and lower A1C. Get started at Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com.
Meet Tomboy X, makers of the original boxer briefs for women. Tomboy X designs gender and size inclusive underwear and apparel. Use code IHEART at checkout for 20% off your first purchase only at tomboyx.com.